I know, we have a small group, so. Absolutely.
Okay, let's get started.
Yeah, let's go.
I like your ambition.
He got the night after the big C and the Giants Stadium. So there was a mini C and the Rabbi Rod, and then he comes out, he starts Brian's, he says, maybe this year I'll spend more time on the days. He'll go and he'll go out and then he'll realize that at times he's got to whisk through the rest of it.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, there was more vacation than the class. Yeah, exactly. Every week is a different, every week I get a message, classes canceled, right? I mean, all right, we're good. Well, we have a big pamphlet, but we have to do that about 50 years. All right, well, good. So the question we're going to discuss tonight is a question of Yisrael Af al Pi Shechata Yisrael Hu. Notion in general that we say that a Jew, no matter what he does, no matter how badly he sins, so he always retains his status as a Jew. And there's this big debate amongst the Rishonim about how literally to take that concept. Like, do you take it seriously? Do you assume that Jewish identity is inalienable? Or is there some sort of terminus where, you know, somebody does something so egregious, or there's such a deep level of assimilation that he loses his status as a Jew? What?
All right.
No polemics.
Is that a Gemara quote?
So we're going to see it right now. That's why we have the hefty sheet. So we're going to skip this first source for now, but we're going to look at the second source. Here you have a Gemara in Yevamos on Mem Zayin Amabes. The Gemara in Yevamos is discussing a case of conversion. And the Gemara says, Tani, Shlosha, in front of three people, okay, you have three judges, Tava V'Allah, if the convert, the person who wants to become Jewish, dips in the mikvah and he comes out. This is after he had a bris milah. Harehu ki Yisrael l'chol dvarav. He's like a Yisrael with respect to all the halachos. So Gemara questions, l'may hilchasa. What does that mean? What's the chiddush? What's the novelty in saying that he's like a Yisrael with respect to all halachos? De'i hadar bei u'mekadesh bas Yisrael. Let's say he wanted to renege on his conversion. He's no longer interested in being Jewish. And then he goes and he marries a Jewish girl. Yisrael mumar karinan bei v'kidusha v'kidushin. So we consider him not to have reverted back to his Gentile status pre-conversion. Rather, he's like a Jewish apostate. And the kidushin are chal, the kidushin are effective. So what this Gemara seems to say is that not only is it true that a Yisrael who apostatizes retains his status as a Jew, but even a convert who started off as a Gentile, and now he apostatizes and is uninterested in Judaism, so even he retains his status as a Jew, and he could always marry a Jewish woman. Okay, but I'm saying, assuming a good conversion. So if
you're a Jew, you're a Jew.
Yeah, even a convert. Good, fine. And that's the chiddush here of l'chol dvarav. Okay, so we'll see in a second. Okay. Next source is the Gemara in Yevamos, at the end of the first parak of Yevamos, Tezayin and Beis. The Gemara tells us a very fascinating halacha. Okay, it's a not so well known Gemara. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav Asi. Rav Yehuda said, the principle that we're assuming throughout is that when a non-Jew tries to marry a Jewish woman, and vice versa, a Jewish man tries to marry a non-Jewish woman, that's not a halachically recognized marriage. By definition, marriage is only between a Jew and a Jew, halachically. So the Gemara says, Ovei kochavim shekidesh bizman hazeh. A random non-Jew walks over to a Jewish girl, and he says, Hariat mikudash esli, choshishin likidushin. We have to worry that maybe the kidushin's effective. Shema me'asaras ha-shvatim hu. Maybe he's one of the 10 lost tribes that were lost in ancient Jewish history. Okay? It's a very good point in the Gemara. So the Gemara asks, V'ha kol de parish miruba parish. Isn't it a principle in halacha that you always go after the majority? So anything that random occurrence, you assume it comes from the majority of people. Since the majority of people in the world are non-Jews, so you should assume he's non-Jewish. So the Gemara says, maybe beduchte de kvi. Maybe it's only in the towns where we happen to have known historically that a lot of the 10 tribes disappeared in that area. So then you can invoke the principle of going after the majority. That's the Gemara's suggestion. So then the Gemara goes on, And the Gemara says, Kamrisa kamei de Shmuel, when I said this in front of Shmuel, he didn't like the idea at all. Amar lei, bincha haba mine Yisrael es kari bincha, ve'ein bincha haba mine ovedes kochavim kari bincha ala bina. So first of all of the males of that generation, of the 10 tribes, if they married non-Jewish women, then none of their kids are Jewish. So it's a moot point with respect to the males of that generation. So the Gemara asks, v'ha'ika banos, what about the daughters, the Jewish daughters of the 10 tribes? So Amar avina shma mina, ben bitcha haba mine ovedes kochavim kari bincha. Okay, very nice. You see that the Gemara is assuming that a Jewish woman always passes on Jewish identity, even if she marries a non-Jewish man. So the Gemara says no. What about the girls? De banta de hahudara itstaruye itstaru. All the girls, all the women of that generation, itstaruye itstaru. Okay, it's not clear what itstaruye itstaru means from the Gemara. If you turn to the next page, to show you how the Meiri explains itstaruye itstaru, this is the Meiri, the first source on the page. First source on the page, the first paragraph. That paragraph. Skip to the end of the last word on the third line. Vishema. Okay, Vishema tomar shema min habanos hu. Maybe someone's born of a Jewish mother from that generation. Hu sheba hagoy aleha. So no. Kabbalah haisa biyadam. We have a mesorah. Al osam habanos shegalu ba'osa shah. That all the women of that generation. Shehin hichliu es atzman ad she'amdu b'navel. Shelo yeshum adam kofetz aleihem. That all of the women of that generation made themselves so undesirable that nobody wanted to marry them. Okay, that's the first suggestion of the Meiri in understanding what it means it's sturei etzdairu. Yeah. Okay. V'hu inyan etzdarui etzdairu. That's what the sturei etzdairu means. They made themselves undesirable. V'yesh mefarshim. Other explain that line in the Gemara. The Meiri is a pretty early commentary. The Meiri is writing in the 13th century in Provence, southern France. V'yesh mefarshim. Shasu koshel ikrin. Shelo leled mehem, that they all drank some sort of medicine or potion that made them infertile. The yesh mefarshim, shenivka bleis beis klitasan leinoy haderech ad shelo hayu ruuyos liklot ulehisaber. Other people explain that they were so worn out from traveling through Galus that they weren't able to conceive. Okay, just from the stress. The lo ode. Okay, and then this is the final point. Coming back to the Gemara, let's go back to the Gemara for a second. Ika de Amri, second to last line in the Gemara. Yeah, we're going back to the Gemara. So that's the Itzturi Itzdairu answer. Okay, nobody conceived from that generation. Ika de Amri, Kamrisa Kame de Shmuel, Amar Le, Lo Zazu Misham Acha Asam Ovde Kochavim Gimurim. No. The Bezin of that generation declared all those 10 tribes to be absolute Gentiles. Lo Zazu Misham, that generation didn't leave. Bezin didn't leave that generation until they transformed them into Gaim Gimurim. So this Gemara in Yevamos seems to maintain that Beis Din has the ability to revoke the status of Kedushas Yisrael, and therefore you don't have to be concerned about any random non-Jew marrying a Jew, because the entire generation of the 10 tribes was declared un-Jewish. Now, what does that mean? Does that set a precedent for future generations, that there is this notion of losing Kedushas Yisrael, or was that a one-time event in history? Right? It's a fairly open question from reading the Gemara. Sounds like it's a one-time event. So if you look at the Ritva, okay, the Ritva is writing in Christian Spain and also the late 13th century, early 14th century. So that's the bottom of page 1. Chidushei Ritva Maseches Yevamos Tes Zayin Amud Beis. So skip to the fourth to last line. Okay, fourth to last line of the Ritva. V'had Amrinan Lo Zazu Misham. End of the line. V'had Amrinan Lo Zazu Misham Ad She'asam Goyim Gemurim Le'osam Bilvad Asu Kigayim. It was only for that single generation. But it's not true for a normal convert who goes back to his original religion. And it doesn't apply to a Jew who apostatized. Okay? So it's very clear from the Ritva this is a one-time in history event. Otherwise, meaning in general, the controlling halacha is mem zayin amabes, where you can never lose your Kedushas Yisrael. The exception is that one time on Tez Zayin Amud Beis in Yevamos. The Meiri, however, let's go back to the Meiri where we left off.
The other one-time incident.
What?
The other one-time incident of women being infertile.
Right, the other one-time incident. But that's according to the first opinion in the Gemara. The second opinion in the Gemara is that it's irrelevant whether they're fertile or not because Beis Din declared them to be not Jewish. Right? So the Meiri now, in explaining that other opinion in the Gemara, Velo Ode, third to last line in the Meiri, last word on the line, Velo, and in that first paragraph still. First paragraph, Miri, last word on the line. Velo od. Elisha Kabbalah haisa biyadam shekol osam shenitmu bahem. That whole generation which assimilated, nitmu ligamri. They assimilated thoroughly, anashim vinashim, men and women, ad shebezin shebeosu adar asam kigayim gimurim. Shelo liosam bechlal dine Yisrael. So is that line ambiguous in the Miri? Whether it could establish a precedent?
Yes.
You think it's ambiguous? Right. And it does seem that his rationale is that you were dealing with a more thorough kind of assimilation, right?
Very subjective.
Well, yeah, it seems subjective, okay? But it seems from this Miri that this Gemara could be invoked that if you're dealing with a thorough assimilation, then you could lose your status as a Jew. And that's the distinction between that generation and a normal Jew who just leaves a Jewish community. Right, so you have somebody who stops keeping Torah mitzvos, but he still identifies culturally as a Jew. Let's say that's not thorough assimilation. So he could always come back. If he marries a Jewish woman, the kedushin's chal. If someone, you know, assimilates ad kedei kach to such an extent that you can't even pick him out as a Jew, maybe that would be too far. Okay, so we'll see the next line in the Miri, next paragraph. Umikan hoyu ktsas rabosai chochachin lomar. And based off this, some of my teachers wanted to say, shekol mishumid bizman hazeh, any apostate in our days, in our time, goy gomerhu, ve'ein choshin lekedushav. So any apostate in our generation is considered a goy gomer. That's a very strong conclusion that the Miri is reaching based off the Gemara and Tezayinim base. Okay? Machlokes the Miri and the Ritva. According to the Miri, you have some sort of precedent. Good. So that's the background. Okay, you have one Gemara on Tezayin. You have one Gemara on Memzayin. According to the Ritva, they're talking about different cases. According to the Miri, maybe they're in contradiction. And maybe some of his Rebbeim even sided with the Gemara in Tezayin that says that Jewish identity is revocable.
Well, how far does one have to go to become apostate? What's that definition? It's hard to list a Jew, Allah B'Shalom, considered an apostate. Or some guy said, look, I'm giving up all my Judaism completely. I'm going to go, well, just go, Unitarian.
Right.
I'll go to Unitarian
right.
Church.
So we'll see that the Rishonim assume definitely somebody who's Oved Avodah Zarah B'mezid, somebody who intentionally violates Avodah Zarah, or somebody who violates Shabbos in public. Mechal Shabbos Behar Hesya. He's also considered a Mumar. Now, it's not clear.
So that's considered an apostate.
Yeah, so. That's considered a Mumar.
And therefore, well, I guess we'll see if that guy's.
Right, we'll see what his status is.
But, you know, it doesn't translate well. It doesn't compute well. Because, like, let's say somebody's going through a rebellious stage and they're traveling on Shabbos and they're doing, you know, other Mechal Shabbos stuff, then they come back to themselves.
Okay, so we'll see that you actually have. We'll see that you have to distinguish between two questions. One
that
question.
That person isn't saying he's a Jew. He's just saying just a Mechal Shabbos.
Okay, so
it depends if he went to become a Buddhist and then.
Oh, that's
back.
A good right. That's a different story.
That's a story.
Right. Absolutely. So there are two things that we're not going to distinguish here. There may be room to distinguish between them, and you'd have to really study the Rishonim and see which, if they use the terms precisely. A mishumad is usually used for somebody who's baptized. That's a mishumad.
Okay.
A mumar is somebody who kind of just rejects the mitzvos and is mechal Shabbos b'far hesia. So you have in public, or worships Avodah Zarah. So you have to see whether they actually use those terms. Because you could say that a mishumad is somebody who's already been accepted into a different faith community.
Correct.
And you might say that's a stronger level of... But we'll see a fascinating question in the Or Zeruah. Let's say a baby's baptized.
Right.
All right, so what, you're going to say that you don't sit Shiva for that baby? So we'll see that discussion in a second. So there may be a distinction between a mishumad and a mumar. I'm not going to get into that now because I'm not 100% sure what the answer is. Something we will see is that there's a difference between asking what's the status of this person while he's in his state of rebellion. At that point in time, he may not be a Jew, but he could always come back to the Jewish fold. And then there's going to be a second question about whether or not, even at that point in time, he could lose his status of the Jew, as a Jew. Meaning you have two questions. You have a question about how easy it is for him to come back and how easy it is for him to get there. But the second question is, even when he's there, do you really assume that he's not a Yisrael whatsoever? Okay. So, for example, I might say...
That's a classical question of the Muranos.
Okay, but I'm just going to give a concrete example. I might say that if he does tshuva, of course he can marry a Jewish woman. The only question is if he tries to marry a Jewish woman before he's done tshuva. So I might say he's not a Jew while he's in a rebellious state, even though he could come back. Or I might say that even in his rebellious stage, he still has Kedushas Yisrael and can marry the Jewish woman. Okay? That's you have to distinguish between. I'm just going to point out that they may be incompatible categories, because somebody might hold it's absolutely incoherent to say that somebody could just like shuffle in between being Jewish and being not Jewish.
I'm very skeptical that
this can't be.
Which?
I mean,
they could just, you know, on that.
Have this. I want to hear what you said.
Right.
But the subjectivity is, at least to me,
right,
fundamentally illogical.
Right. Especially from a legal perspective.
Right. You could tell his profession.
Well, right. No, I was saying, especially from a legal perspective. Right.
You'd have no Jews because everybody.
Everyone's oscillating in and.
Everyone would be not Jewish.
All right. I said no polemics. Okay. So let's see what the Rishonim say.
Okay. But I was going to ask you on a different tack. The Nevi always—it's brought up quite often. In other words, you have the Jewish people rebel. Okay, they have a korban, and they say, you know, it's a divorce. And Kadosh Baruch says, there's no divorce.
Right.
At how point here you have people,
right,
who are really strained and given up all hope and ties to Judaism because of what's happened.
Right.
And you're doing from the prophesy, and the bottom line prophecy is, as we try to end the Haftorah on a note of optimism,
right,
that Kodesh Baruch, you're on a Kodesh, you can never.
So the truth is, right, so there is a Gemara in Sanhedrin. Turn back to page 1 for a second, and this is what gets invoked by the Rishonim. Rashi turns this into a cause celeb. You'll see Rashi is always invoking this Gemara in Sanhedrin to point out this Gemara in Sanhedrin is Nagadat Gemara. Like, the Gemara has all these kind of nice drashos from Psukim. So it's just interesting that this becomes the definitive legal citation for Rashi and his Talmidim. So the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Mem Dalet Amud Aleph, page 1. Pasuk in Yeshua says, Chata Yisrael, the Jewish people sinned. It's talking about when they took stuff from the Cherem in the times of Yeshua. Chata Yisrael, the Jewish people sinned. Amar Rabbi Abba Bar Zavda, Afal Pisha Chata, even though they sinned, Yisrael who? They're still called Yisrael. Right? So to say this Gemara has legal force is not at all, it's not at all evident from the Gemara in Sanhedrin, given the context. If you see the Gemara there, it's like nice, I got it, the Gemara. But see, Rashi definitely takes it that way.
Okay.
They took from a cherem. They weren't supposed to take the loot of the city.
That means that I'm apostate.
Right, exactly.
It just means I'm pleading.
He is a lot more.
Yeah, let's get to work. So let me just structure this by saying that I want to ask really three questions. The question that you're bothered, just remind me your name.
Kenny Eckstein,
okay. So one question is how easy is it to make that transition from being Jewish to not Jewish and then from not Jewish to Jewish? Okay, we'll see one important question that this became very popular during the time of the Shulchan Aruch and the early Achronim, in the transition to the 16th and 17th century, even though the Rishonim don't really understand the custom, but that they started requiring Baal Tshuva, let's say somebody who was a Mishumad or an apostate and then wanted to come back to the Jewish community, so they started obligating him to do Tevila. He had to go to the Mikvah before he came back. And we'll see the Ritva already says, I don't know where this came from. Here, you can take a look on. Might as well just throw it in here. Page 4. See, the Ritva already quotes the Minog, and he says that it clearly can't be real. The Ritva, the second source on page 4, third to last line. See where the parentheses are? So right after the parentheses, V'Yisrael shechata v'chazar b'tshuva, Yisrael who sinned and then came back to the Jewish community, dekuli alma shuras hadin eino tzarach tvila. Everyone knows that, of course, he doesn't have to go to the mikvah. Right? Only a convert needs to go to the mikvah. Ela kabbalas chaveris pifnei bezin lechatchila, but it's nice if he sits in front of a bezin and says, I'm sincere. V'af al pichein hu tovel midrabanan mishum ma'ala. But even so, it's a nice din drabanan that he should go to the mikvah. It's a ma'ala, it's a value. Dimi ditfilas eved mishuchar. Just like we make an eved who's freed go to the mikvah. So the Ritva says it can't be da'oraisa, but he says, you know what, it's a nice idea. The Achronim make a much bigger deal about it. That, of course, if you're coming back to the Jewish community, you have to go to the mikvah. It's like part of your reinduction process. Okay, so that's going to be one question. How easy is it to come back? If I'm going to argue that a Meshumad is not a Yisrael at all, and I'll maintain that Tshuva brings him back into the Jewish community, then I have a very fluid barrier between being a Jew and not being a Jew. That's going to be one question. Second question is going to be whether or not he actually loses his status as a Jew. If I deny that he loses his status as a Jew, even when he's a Meshumad, then I don't have that barrier problem. But then the question is going to be, why do I say, with respect to which mitzvos is he now out of the fold? So for example, I'll say that he could always marry a Jew. That's always going to be effective. But let's say if he tries to be part of a minyan, or if he's married to a woman and then he dies, or let's say, could he have Yibum? Let's say his brother dies. Is his brother's wife now obligated to marry him? We'll see. That's going to be an important question. Yerusha. If someone's a Meshumah, does he have halachic rights to inherit his father? So I might say he's not a Jew with respect to those dinim, even though he could still marry a Jewish woman. So why some mitzvos yes and no some mitzvos no? The third question is going to be, can we maintain that he is a Jew, but there are specific aspects of Jewishness that don't apply to him? And I don't just mean that some mitzvos are not applicable to him, but let's say with something we'll see that maybe he's not defined as a relative of his family. So familial ties are dependent on a certain level of Jewishness, whereas certain other halachos are just dependent on your status as a Jew. So I might say he's a Jew, but an unrelated Jew to anybody else. We'll see that in a minute. Good. That's my set. So let's... Yeah. All right, so let's get to work. So let me just start with the Avelos question. Start with the Avelos question on page 2. The Or Zeru on the end of Hilchos Avelos, bottom of page 2, Simin Tav Chav Ches. So the Or Zeru raises the following question. Miu b'shas ha-shmad. At a time of oppression, he's writing during the Crusades. Shemati mi mori harav Reb Shimshon Zatzal, Sharbenu Gershom, you see Rabbeinu Gershom or Agola, Nis'abel al beno kishenishtabed arba asar yom. Kal v'chomer l'shchino yidalad yom. So Rabbeinu Gershom, when his son converted to Christianity, or he was taken to Christianity, so he sat Shiva when he converted for 14 days. Right? 7 days for his guf and 7 days for his spiritual conversion. So he's clearly thought that not only did he lose his status as a Jew, but he kind of saw him as halachically not being alive. That's what the Or Zeruah quotes from Rabbeinu Gershom. V'hani mili b'gadol shen ishtamid. But that's only going to be true for an adult who converts. Aval katan ben shana ben shenatayim shen ishtamid im imo. What do you do? The Crusaders took a baby with his mother, and they both converted to Christianity. The baby's a year old. Yesh umes. Then the child dies as a Christian, as a baby. Yesh omrim shem is abel alav. Some people say you should sit avelos for the baby. Why? Devadai b'gadol ein misabel. For sure, for an adult, you shouldn't sit avelos. Aval katan shesamuhu b'mayim. It's clear he's talking about baptism. They put a little baby underwater. Ma malo ma morin. That's conversion. V'havale kilu lo nishtamed. It's as if this little baby never converted in the first place. Aval Rabbeinu Tam zatzal. Rabbeinu Tam was the greatest of the Balei Tosfos. Omer she'ein misablin olav. Even for the little baby, you don't sit avelos. Detani b'tosefta de Sanhedrin. That even the babies of an Irni Dachas, if you have a majority of a city that violates Avodah Zarah, you destroy the entire city, even the babies. So Rabbeinu Tam said, you see that you don't distinguish. And what? You can't say the babies violated Avodah Zarah. So Rabbeinu Tam says, that's the same principle if you have a little minor who converted to Christianity. So machlokas between Rabbeinu Tam and the Or Zeruah, whether you sit Avelos. And then he goes, the Or Zeruah objects, skip to the period. The Lav Rayahi, that's not a good proof. Even that Gemara about Irni Dachas is only talking about a minor who knows what's going on. He's cognizant. But a little baby doesn't know the difference in his right hand and his left hand. You can never say that he's considered as if he violated Avodah Zarah.
Parenthetically, if a Jewish man marries a non-Jewish woman who converts, undergoes the Geirus, she had little children.
Before or after?
Before. She had children from...
They have to convert also.
I understand that's what my point I'm saying is, so if they're 5 years old or 6 years old, so whatever you do, hope is to convert them, but then don't they have to make...
Yeah, that's a big shiloh. It's a very complicated thing,
yeah. Don't they have to what?
In other words, if they get converted when they're 5 because the mother married...
And they have to convert
they
again
have to,
when...
They have to make a serious choice...
Conversion.
When the base then determines that... They're old enough to make a serious choice,
right.
Or that they really want to be converted, or they're not converted.
Right. But that usually
so
we say...
This is the back end of that, this little baby. Why would you possibly assume it?
Right. Okay. Maybe. That's a more complicated case, so we'll talk about that separately. V'od, the Ir HaNidachas lo shaycha l'shar mekomos. Everybody knows that Ir HaNidachas is a very unique halachic principle, so you can never bring a proof from Ir HaNidachas to anything else. Okay. That's the objection of the Or Zeruah. But nonetheless... Skip a line. The Ode Hayer Rabbeinu Tam No Sein Tam. Fascinating Rationale of Rabbeinu Tam. This is on the fourth to last line, third word. Ve'od hay Rabbeinu Tam no sein tam. Shesmeichim al misaso yoser michayev. The reason why you're not sitting avelos is because you're actually happier that this child died than lived. Why? Ki im hayachai sofo hayalavod avodah zarah. Had the child have lived, then he would have ended up violating avodah zarah. So even from a religious perspective, so Rabbeinu Tam is arguing that there's more to be happy about when he dies than had he have lived. Okay, it's a very complicated tshuva of Rabbeinu Tam and the Or HaZeruah. But the Or HaZeruah objects again. Next line. Ve'ein nira ki mitam zeh lo yisablu alav afilu kodem shesamu b'mayim. The Or HaZeruah objects that if that's what it's true, it has nothing to do with the actual conversion. It's like, even if you know they're gonna baptize the child, you shouldn't sit avelus anymore. Because if you're just questioning what's gonna happen later on in his life, you know that he's gonna be an Oved Avodah Zarah. Crusaders come through a town, they convert all the women and children, right? They kill the men, or the couple of men flee. So even if they don't convert the child technically, you should still be happier about his death. So it's a very complicated sugya. Okay, but the point is you have a very strong debate here between the Or HaZeruah and Rabbeinu Tam, whether or not you should set avelos over these children, these mishumad children. The second case I wanna discuss is a clearer case on page 4, the question of Yerusha.
Oh, okay.
We'll come back to Yibam. Yerusha is the clearer case for my intents purposes right now. The Gemara in Kedushin on Daf Yud Ches Amud Aleph has the following question. It's the third to last source in the page. Page 4. Rabbi Chiya bar Av and Rabbi Yochanan Ovid Kochavim Yorish is Aviv Dvar Torah. A non-Jew inherits his father. Dichsiv ki Yerusha le'esav nesati es har seir. I gave Esav a Yerusha. So you see a Gentile has the ability to inherit his father. So the Gemara objects. The Gemara objects. V'dilma Yisrael mumar shayni. Esav wasn't a Gentile. Esav was an apostatized Jew. Right? He was born to a Jewish mother. So that's the Gemara's objection. Okay, so let's take that as the end of the Gemara right now. So the Rush says, skip to the next source, the Rush ruling in Kiddushin on that Gemara says, Mikan poskim, the Yisrael mumor lavodos kochavim, yorish es aviv. Just like the Gemara said, Esav inherits his father because he was Yisrael mumor, unlike a Gentile. Therefore, you see that a Jew who apostatized also has the right to inherit his religious father. It's clear from the Gemara in Kiddushin. Esav inherited Yitzchak. Okay, so that could be a good objection. The Rush doesn't take that objection. The Rush paskins l'halacha. He's writing a sefer halacha that, based off this Gemara, a non-Jew, an apostate can inherit his father. Seemingly saying that, therefore, why? Because he's a Jew.
Yeah.
And look at the end of the Rush, the bolded line, the last line of the Rush. V'chein mistaver, that's intuitive. Da'af agav shechata Yisrael hu. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, af al pi shechata Yisrael hu. L'kadush es isha ulegarish. But, what? Well, here the Gemara says he's not. The Gemara says he's a mumar. The Gemara says a Gentile wouldn't inherit his father. An apostate would. A Jewish apostate would.
No,
so the Rush says...
There's nobody arise to
what?
Well, I don't believe in any of this stuff before Matan Torah, so...
Okay. The Rush did, clearly in this case. And then the Rush says that has to be the case because the Yisrael Meshumad is always a Jew.
So
right?
You don't believe in using the Torah?
I don't believe Avram Avinu put on tefillin. If that's the bottom line question you're asking me, I fight with one of our rabbis every other day about that stuff.
That's a separate argument. I happen to think that it could very well be the case that Avram put on tefillin, and it's not absurd to believe that he did. I mean, there's good rational reasons for assuming that he may have. But it's a different discussion. We digress. We have our topic set out for us. So that's the citation of the Kiddush. Now, the Beis Yosef in his Shut Avkas Rochel, Beis Yosef wrote the Shulchan Aruch. He also has a series of tshuvos called Avkas Rochel. So he says, Yesh ladun al taina sarash. Shetan shetshuva zu v'gam b'psakav da'af api shechata Yisrael hu b'nohu l'chol davar. He's like, I don't think the rationale of Yisrael api shechata Yisrael hu is relevant to this question about inheritance. Why? The ikal emeimar delav klalohu l'chol mili. When we say that Yisrael api shechata Yisrael hu, it doesn't mean that he's a Jew with respect to all of the Torah. Tehasam l'inyan kiddushin l'inyan shebno hameshumad pater min hayibum. Maybe it's only true with respect to kiddushin, being able to marry a Jewish woman. And that if a woman has a son who apostatized, and then her husband dies, she's not obligated to marry her husband's brother. I mean, if a woman has no children, she's obligated to marry the husband's brother.
Oh,
so if she has a son who apostatized, she's considered to have a son. He's Jewish enough.
My understanding with Hebrew,
one second. Aval inyan Yerusha.
You don't have to do Hebrew.
Okay, we'll see.
As long as you had a child.
Yeah, that's true.
So then what's the difference?
Because a son who's a Meshuvah might be worse. It might be like you never had a son. We'll see. Aval inyan Yerusha ein lanu. But with respect to Yerusha, maybe the principle is not true. So he doesn't think that the rationale... Yeah. Yeah. So, come. Now, on page 5, we have a true of Natra Noigon, and we'll see this is a consistent opinion in the Gaonim. Okay, before the Tkufa of the Rishonim, he's writing in the 9th century, I think in Surah, in Bavel. And he was asked the following question. You can see these questions keep recurring. The Rav Natra Noi, second source on page 5. Does apostate inherit his father? That's how the Goanim always start their tshuvos. This is what we were informed from heaven. A Meshumad does not inherit his father. My taima. Once he apostatizes, he leaves the sanctity of Yisrael. And he loses the sanctity of his father.
This is somebody who's been baptized.
It seems like. It seems so. Problem is, when you compare the different tshuvos of the Goanim, some of them say Meshumad, some of them say Mumar. That's what I'm saying. A lot of people use the terms interchangeably.
Was this
yeah.
Here?
Yeah. But
where?
In Bavel.
Yeah.
Right. He's actually in Islamic lands
so,
over here.
You think when he's referring to Meshumad here, he's referring to what kind of person?
Either if you want to say Meshumad means a convert to another religion,
okay,
it would
so
mean that he
permanently adopted another religion.
Exactly. Umikdusha devu of Ashkechinon, the lo havya Yerusha el lebar Yisrael, dimisyaches basar avuhi. There's only inheritance for a Yisrael, for a Jew, who has yichus following his father. So notice there seem to be two different points here. A, Kedushas Yisrael. B, that you actually are related to your father halachically. Then he cites a pasuk, dichsiv, v'nasati lecha ulezaracha acharecha. Hashem says, I'm giving this to you and to your children who follow after you. Zera kosher demisyaches achar Yisrael. It only could be a kosher child who follows after his father. Okay, and you read the rest of the tshuva. It seems like he's making the point very strongly. It's not so much a question of whether this child is Jewish, rather a question of whether we view this child as following in the footsteps of his father. So it may be that Rav Natra Noigon would say, with respect to all other areas, this apostate is a Jew. Specifically with respect to Yerusha, where it's about a connection between a father and a son, if the son leaves the path of his father, then he's not included in the laws of inheritance anymore. So this might be a very localized din of Yerusha.
It's much more narrow than saying he's not Jewish.
Absolutely. Right, he might argue that he is Jewish, but he's not considered to be in this, you know, parental line, or this familial line. Good. So you have a whole range. The Rush thought it was contingent on Yisrael af pishachat Yisrael hu, the general question of whether he's Jewish. He says he is Jewish, therefore he inherits. The Beis Yosef argued in the Avkas Rochel that maybe this is a separate question. Maybe in general, of course he's Jewish, and over here it's a special question about Yerusha. And indeed, it seems like Rav Natra Noigon is actually maintaining that this is a limited question about whether he's defined as his father's son. Okay. That's the Yerusha question. With respect to Ribbis, you'll see a very interesting debate. The Torah says, Le'achicha lo sashich. You're not allowed to lend ribbis to your brother. You're not allowed to lend interest to somebody who's your brother. So take, for example, the Yireim on the bottom of page 5. The Yireim is a student of Rabbeinu Tam. The Rabbeinu Tam we saw about Avelos, that you don't set Avelos for a child who's baptized. So the Yireim here writes, in Siman Kufnin Vav, the Yireim wrote a book on all the mitzvos. Ulahalvos la'avaryon b'mezid. Notice how he's not using the term Meshumad here yet. He just says somebody who does Averos b'mezid. B'ribbis, can you lend him with interest? Shamati merabosai sha'asar. I heard from my teachers that it's prohibited. Im eino mishumad. If he hasn't converted to another religion. Avalim hu mishumad. Deshavik hetera v'achal isura. If he's a convert who left what's permissible and did that which is prohibited. Minhu. Then he's a heretic. V'ribishalo mutar. And you're allowed to charge him with interest. V'hadam rinam b'sanhedrin. Aye, the Gemara says. Chata Yisrael. Af bisha chata Yisrael hu. Tafkal inyan kiddushin. That's just with respect to Jewish marriage. Okay? So he has the opposite approach of what we're arguing in the Rav Natra Noi. Rav Natra Noi was saying Yerusha is the one exception where he's not Jewish. The Yireim here is arguing only Kedushin. Kedushin is the only case where we consider him to be a Jew. Dafkal inyan Kedushin. Deloksib.
Everything else
Well, we'll see.
Not a Jew, but if he can marry a Jew.
Right, right. Meaning the fundamental identity as a Jew he has, with respect to most mitzvos, we don't treat him as a Jew. Delo ksiv b'hu, why is kedushin different? Let's see why. Delo ksiv b'hu achva. Because the Torah never says that the question of marriage is contingent on the fraternity of Jewish people. Achva means like brotherhood. But any mitzvah that's contingent on, let's say, like we say in Yivamos, goy shekidish bizman hazeh choshen lekidushav chashinon shem me'aseres hashvatim aval inyan ribis achva ksibbe. So whenever the Torah says achva, so then an apostate is not included in that fraternity. But as an identity, he's defined as being Jewish. Look at Rashi, one source earlier, Isser v'heter l'Rashi, Simen Sadites, right before the Yireim. Asr likach ribis mi'Yisrael mishumad, you're not allowed to charge an apostate ribis, can't charge him interest. De'lo nafik michlal lo sashich, he never leaves, remember the Torah says lo achicha lo sashich. Rashi says, you know what, he's still included in achicha. Shenemar chata Yisrael af pisha chata Yisrael hu, dekarilei v'chein leget u'lechalitza v'kidushin Yisrael gomar hu. So you see, Rashi is already pushing strongly, you know, against what everyone else is rebelling against. Rashi thinks he's Yisrael with respect to everything. Okay, the Yireim thinks that's not the case. Okay, so that's the question with respect to Ribbis and with respect to Yerusha.
Category.
Yeah. So I want to flesh out why that category. Yeah. Okay, so let's take a look at your coin. Yeah. Yeah, it's a very interesting question about Dochening, and we'll see, once again, a fight between Rashi and his predecessors. So the Gemara in Psachim, on Menachos, Daf Kuv Tesam Dalef, it's a Mishnah, page 6, top of page 6, the Mishnah says, Kohanim Sheshimshu Beis Chonav, a Kohen who served in Beis Chonav, which was Avodah Zarah, Lo Yishamshu B'Mikdash Sheb Yerushalayim. They can't serve in the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim. Okay, so a Kohen who does Avodah Zarah can't just turn around and say, I'm going to be a Kohen in the Beis HaMikdash.
Beis Chonav, what,
I don't know exactly where it was. I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay, it was Alexandria?
Yeah.
Okay. Good. So Rav Nachum Noy, once again, page 6 in the middle. Everybody see it? Chuvos Rav Nachum Noy going. Smack in the middle of page 6.
Okay.
Kohen Shenishtamid V'chazar Bo. So Kohen converted to another religion, then he came back to Judaism. Lo Yisa Es Kapa V'lo Yikra Kohen. He can't duchin, and he can't even be called a Kohen. You can't give him the first Aliyah. My Taima D'chiyavu Min Shemaya Mala. You can see the Gonim have like this flowery rhetoric. So the grace that he was given by Shemayim Bezman D'Koyim B'Ktu Shase only applies when he keeps his sanctity. K'dechse V'Kidash D'Lechol D'Avar She'B'Ktu Shase. You have to respect, you have to sanctify a Kohen. Liftoach Rishon, to give him the first Aliyah. Livarech Rishon, to offer him benching. Birchas Hamazon, that he could lead the Zimon. V'haikvar achla l'kedushay. But this Kohen who served Avodah Zarah or converted, so he already was mechalel, he desecrated his intrinsic kedusha. Uman deparis yadeh, somebody who's going to spread out his hands. Tadochin tzarech l'mahavi miyushar bedrachav. He has to be very straight in his ways. Mitzuyin borachose. An excellent model for everyone. Why? Detzrachinon l'michtam birchasam in shmayal yadeh. Because you need the seal of Hashem when he's dochening. Okay, v'zeh, end of skipping to the end of the line. V'zeh, kivon shechilal k'tushaso, mahana yesh b'nesiyas kapov shalo. V'chizet tzad mevarech, asher k'tushanu b'k'tushaso sel Aaron. How could he say Hashem endowed me with the k'tusha of Aaron if he apostatized? Okay, now, what's strange here is that this is even if he came back and did tshuva. Right, he went through as many Yom Kippurims, he clapped al ched, he gave tzedakah.
Well,
he converted, but then he came back. So you could only come back so far.
Right,
exactly. You'll see some of the Rishonim say, you know, it's good enough that he comes back as a regular Yisrael. He doesn't come back as a Kohen.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. That's the way they say it. Which is fascinating, though, because I would have said, Yisrael af pisha chata Yisrael hu, you know what? It's never too late to do tshuva. You could always regain your status.
Could somebody daven for the Amud if, in fact, they had converted and then came back?
I think usually we assume yes. There's a tshuva of the Maharam, not about this question, but he thinks that davening for the Amud is like a Kohen serving in the... So then I have to look into it. I'll check out that tshuva of the Maharam.
Do you have one about a Mumar?
Right, so I don't know. I'd have to check.
You don't
what do you mean? Oh, about a Mumar.
What if you're a Mumar? Can you still be a Kohen?
Okay, so let's see the way Tosos poses the question. Tosos and Menachos Kuf Tesamud Aleph, the second source on the page. This is actually Tosos printed on the side of the page. So... Lo yishamshu v'mikdash b'yushalayim b'sefer hazayir, another Gaonic work, kasav, shekoen shehemir, that's also a lashon of mumar, shehemir dato, he left the religion, lo yisa eskapo v'lo yikarisho andechsev v'kidashto. Okay, skip to the third line. V'rashi pirish, right in the middle of the third line. D'kasher, Rashi says he's kasher, Rashi is consistent. V'zeh l'shono, mehocha nafkalan d'kohen shehemir daito v'chazer b'tshuva, kasher l'duchen. Shari lo matzinu kohen ba'amum, fine. And he goes on to argue why, exactly. There's nothing important in his rationale. But Rashi argues once again. Rashi thinks that a Kohen who does tshuva, his tshuva is entirely accepted and he could even go back to Duchen. So once again, you have this machlokes.
Tosfos says you don't.
Well, Tosfos just cites the Gaonim and then he cites Rashi. He doesn't take a stand.
Of course, the Rambam's concept of tshuva, how could you possibly think that he couldn't be?
Well, the Rambam, actually, here, you have the Rambam on the bottom of page 6 who says that he can't go back to Duchen.
He can't go back.
Cannot. Yeah, very, very interesting.
Very,
yeah.
But that's not so.
Yeah.
What assume it's what yeah. Your basic philosophy is. Once you are a Meshuvah, you believe that it doesn't matter, that you really can never lose your Judaism no matter what you do.
Right, so here they're saying you can't lose.
What you say, you can't undo being a Jew, sort of like Hitler.
But maybe the point here.
The philosophy is if I really go ahead and become a Meshuvah as we've defined it, I lose my Judaism. I mean, those are the two extremes, and I'm coming back as a new, fresh person.
Right.
Now, there are people who have...
You could phrase it that way.
The Arusha and the other stuff.
Right. You could put it that way and say it's a question of, you know, according to Rav Nachman Neugon, you left, and now that you're coming back, so you only come back minimally. You could phrase it that way. According to Rashi, you never left. Or you could say that, even according to Rav Nachman Neugon, you never left, but you never left your Kedushas Yisrael, but you left your Kedushas Kahuna.
Now, does Rashi say...
Right, you could say you lost your status as a Kohen.
Does Rashi say even a Meshumad does not...
I think we'll have to see. We'll have to check. Let's see if we have any more citations of Rashi. Okay. That's another important point. Do I have 5-6 more minutes?
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Yeah. Okay, so let's look at the Yibum question. The Yibum question is an interesting one. Yeah.
You're anticipating the tent and the conversation.
Yeah.
Behave
often. What's the question with respect to Yibum? So the question with respect to Yibum is actually twofold. Okay. Number one, you have every case of Yibum, you have two brothers. One of them is married. They may both be married. One of the brothers dies without any children. So his wife is now obligated to marry the brother. Okay?
Or vice versa.
Well, the brother's
obligated to marry the wife. That's more accurate.
When did that end in the Ashkenazic world?
In Ashkenazic world, I think in the Middle Ages, I assume.
When did it end there?
It's a question in the Gemara already, whether Chalitza is more...
His thing.
I don't know his spiel. But usually his spiels are entertaining. So the question here is like this. So let's say you really have three questions with respect to Yibum. Let's say the husband who died is a mumar. Okay. So is his wife obligated now to is the brother obligated to marry the wife? What's the question? So why is what's the question there? So for example, the point here is that let's say somebody. Is the Gemara already talks about the case? Someone is absolutely infertile. Let's say the husband is infertile, so his wife is not obligated to do Yibum now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because the Gemara says exactly it's v'lo yimachesh shmo, so that his name shouldn't be erased for generations. Prat l'misha shmo kvar machloi. But if somebody never was gonna produce children, then the brother doesn't have an obligation to produce children for him. Right? It's a very simple rationale. So the question is. Do you view a mumar as halachically being somebody who's shmo machloi? His name is erased from the Jewish people. A mumar. So just to show you somebody who deals with that explicitly, turn back to that first Meiri. The Meiri who said that you could use the Gemara on Tes Zayin as precedent that you could lose your Kedushas Yisrael. So on page 2, the second paragraph on page 2. So remember he just said, a lot of my teachers said that you could lose your status as a Jew. And the second to last line in the second paragraph of the Meiri, v'chein kasvu. Everybody see it? Chain Kasvu? Second to last line in the Meiri on page 2. Second paragraph. V'chein Kasvu, fourth line, fourth word. She'im habal mishumad, let's say the husband is a mishumad, umes, eina zekuka klal, his wife is not bound to marry the brother, divilo yimachesh shmokziv, the Torah says, so that his name shouldn't be erased, zekvar shmo machli, and his name is already erased. So a mumar, if a mumar dies, so he doesn't have this right to have a child produced in his...
That says a mishumad.
A mishumad, in echanami. I'm not distinguishing here between mishumad and a mumar, for our intents and purposes. Then the Meiri himself says, "V'daiti bekulam shecholatis v'lo misyav emes." I don't agree with my rebbeim. Right, he's quoting his rebbeim until now. I personally think that you should do chalitza. Right, whenever you can't do yom, you do chalitza. The rebbeim argued further. They said you don't even need chalitza because there's no chiyuv of yibam. Chalitza dissolves the chiyuv of yibam. The rebbeim are saying you don't even need it. So that's one scenario. The other scenario is, let's say the brother, who this woman is now obligated to marry. Let's say he's a mumar or a mishumad. Right, so would you impose on this woman to marry him? Okay, so take a look, for example, at the ritva. Very fascinating ritva on the bottom of page 3.
He's still having the kid in the father's name. The husband doesn't necessarily raise the kid.
So that gets onto this like subtle question in Yibam, like who's the... It says that you're fathering a child. Well, what is it? Right, it does raise that very interesting question.
I would say she's not obligated.
You would say she's not obligated. Okay, so we'll see the ritva. So look at the page 3, bottom of page 3. The ritva actually writes, there's also this subtle question here, a question in Yibam. What's the critical moment for Yibam? At the moment when the first husband married the woman? So that initial kedushin, right, kind of like triggers this whole relationship with his brothers and his family.
Conditional yibum.
Right. Or it's like this like familiar bond created then. Or do you say it's the point of death? When the husband dies without children, so then this concept of yibum goes into effect. That's called nisuin mapilin or misa mapelas. Is it the death that triggers the yibum or the kedushin? So there's this whole debate, which we'll see in a second, between all these different go'onim. Let's say you hold that a mumar, like you said, a mumar can't marry. She doesn't have an obligation to marry the brother who's a mumar. So he was a mumar when? He was a mumar at the time of the initial kedushin, or he was a mumar at the time of the death. And let's say he did tshuva in between. Okay, so this is a big argument. Okay, but just to show you in principle, the ritva here says, I'll read it at the bottom of page 3. V'achav hu l'chol davar, fine. Okay, skip to the fourth line there. After the comma on the fourth line of the ritva, umir miu hadavar matmiya. The ritva just quoted some goonim who said that she does have to marry the mumar brother. But I think this is astonishing. Misha oved avodah zarah, somebody who worships avodah zarah, uboel gaya, right? He marries non-Jewish woman. The overal kol haTorah, this guy violates all the mitzvot. Heich mekayim zarah lacherim. How could the Torah entrust him to father this child who's supposed to bear the legacy of his father? And how could we have an obligation to have a child for him? Shelo yimachesh mo b'Yisrael. Roi hayo lomar shelo tehei ishto olu yibam. It makes so much more sense to say the wife is not bound at all, not for yibam, v'lo lechalitza. The ashkechan perkama we saw in the first parak, degazru aleim sheyu kigayim lechol divrayim. Right, they even wanted to turn them into absolute Gentiles. The Kol Shekein Misha Kofer B'Kol HaTorah B'Farhesia. You know, the 10 tribes just got lost, but this guy is actually Mechal Shabbos, so you're going to let him get away with it? So then he goes on to say that this is what he really thinks. It makes sense that there shouldn't be an Ibam, but he's not going to defy his Rebbeim who say that there is. Okay, that's the position of the Ritva. Now look at the Mordechai in the top of the page. Also, I'll actually look at the second to last source on page 3, the Mordechai in Yevamos, right before the Ritva.
Where are you?
Page 3, same page.
Oh, okay.
The Mordechai in Yevamos, the small two-line paragraph. This is a fascinating line. Matzasi tshuva mirabenu Avram hagadol miRegensburg, town in Germany. This is the Mordechai. The Mordechai is writing at the very end of the 13th century, 1296. He was killed in the Crusade. So he wrote a parish on all of Gemara. He's published in the back of the Gemara. So the Mordechai writes, I found this tshuva for Avram of Regensburg. And this is what he wrote, Zelashono. Al Yivama Shanafu Lifne Mumar. A Yivama falls, she's supposed to, the brother is a Mumar. Ika Dvarn Bego is an important question to be raised. Iboi Yafilu Chalitza. Does she need Chalitza? Divmakom Ervahu.
It's like almost like a case of promiscuity. De kanoin pogimbo. De gam hanivelas larmoi kanoin pogimbo. What do we say? It's like the case of Pinchas and Zimri. Pinchas stabs them with a spear because if you see a Jew having relations with a non-Jew, so you're allowed to kill them in the middle of the act. So he says, you're going to say this mumar, seemingly, the argument goes, is like a aramai. He's like an Aramean. He's like a non-Jew. So you're going to say that for the mitzvah of Yibum, she's bound to him, when in general the halacha is that you're allowed to kill them if they're caught in the act? So Rav Rami Regensburg over here clearly assumes that this mumar loses his status as a Jew altogether. To the point that it even has this prohibition, this mitzvah that you're allowed to kill them in the middle. Okay. But if you look at the Mordechai, the rest of the Mordechai, which you have on top of the page, you'll see it's a very complicated question. So the first two paragraphs go back and forth about whether it's, he quotes some Gaonim, who say that, again, a mumar does not have Yibum, but he goes back and forth whether it's the critical point is the Misa or the Nisuin, which says, I don't want to get into that. But if you just look at the the paragraph, the fourth paragraph that starts, Va'amashe Rashi Zal Hevi Raya, he quotes Rashi, Le'isser. Rashi holds that there is an Isser, meaning she is bound to the Mumar. She has to do Yibum with him. Why? The Ha'im Kidesh Kiddush of Kiddushin. From the fact that in general we say that a Mumar is able to marry a Jewish woman, therefore you see that also with respect to Yibum, he's a Jew and he has to marry her. So again, Rashi is absolutely, absolutely consistent. Okay, so Machlokas here throughout. Okay, it's very strong Machlokas here whether or not there is Zika, what we call it. There is a bond such that she has to marry this non-Jew. There's also a third question when it comes to Yibum, not about the husband, not about his brother, but about the child.
Now, does it have anything to do with consent here, or this is purely...
No, we never assume that there's a question.
The woman could be forced to marry...
So the Maharam Rutenberg has a big chiddush in the sugya. He thinks it's not contingent on the objective status of the mumar, but he assumes that if this woman knew when she was marrying her husband that she would be stuck marrying the Meshumad brother, then she never would have gotten involved in the first place.
One thing about marriage, you assume there is some, there's some free will desire to get married.
Right.
Which is different from Yibum.
Right, so Yibum is actually by, she doesn't have a choice most of the time.
It seems more strict.
Yes, actually a lot of, if you get into the mitzvah of Yibum, and maybe we'll do this on a different day, the difference between Yibum and Kiddushin, a lot of very interesting questions about the relationship.
But there's a lot of ways out of Yibum.
Yeah, you do Chalitza. But here the question is, I mean, look, we'll see in a second, I'll show you a tshuva of the Maribe Rav, the Maranos, in the 15th century in Spain. So, she hasn't heard from her husband in a couple of years. The husband's a Meshumad. Or the brother. Her husband died, she has no kids. His brother is a Meshumad already living in some other town in Spain. She has no idea where he is. She can't get remarried until he does Chalitza. So it's a critical question. She can't just get out of it, she doesn't know where he is. So that becomes a pressing question. That's the Yibum question. So let me just throw out here one more point. It's very important. So skip here to the bottom of page 6. Distinguishing between different areas, between the steer, distinguish, what? Distinguishing between different generations. I think this is a very important point. It's bottom of page 6. Kuti Shekidesh, a non-Jew, Kuti, it's not clear what their status is. He marries a Jew. Hava Uvda, there was such a case. V'atzurchua Gita Mirav Yehudaigon Umar Rav Shmuel Reish Kala. Two of these prominent Gaonim said that he has to give her a get. Instead of saying that the Kedushin wasn't Chal, that the Kedushin wasn't effective, they required a get. Misafik. Ubar Mumar. What about the son of an apostate? Not an apostate himself, but his son. The Isyalid Migoya. He's the child of... I don't think it means a Goya. I think it means a Mishumedes. Lo Tafsi Kedushin. Mumar Gufe Tafsi Kiddushin. It sounds like what he's arguing is that the second generation, the son of a Mumar, his Kiddushin wouldn't be effective, even though the Kiddushin of a Mumar himself would be effective. So it's kind of like this notion. I think that what he's arguing is that Yisrael, Afa Pisha Chata Yisrael, who is limited to that person who converted. But his child, who's brought up entirely as a non-Jew, his Kiddushin wouldn't count as a Jewish Kiddushin. Meaning the idea of Yisrael, Af Pishachat Yisrael, who holds for one generation. Mm-hmm. But the child wouldn't be considered Jewish, even if he marries a Jewish woman. Even if the father marries a Jewish woman. Let's say they're both apostatized.
That doesn't make sense, because if the father marries a Jewish woman, he's Jewish to the mother.
No, I'm saying, let's say the woman is also a Mishumadas.
Oh, also.
Yeah, let's assume.
So that's a whole other question, which is, Now we're talking about a woman who's a mishumetis. Her child, biological child, would not be a Jew.
Right. That's why it's big chiddush.
That's pretty extreme.
Yeah. If you don't want to read it into here, which I think is what he's saying, you could skip to the Mari Bei Rav.
Does Rashi agree with that?
Rashi probably would not agree with that. I would assume that Rashi would not. Rashi says Yisrael l'chol davar. Yeah.
My question is, the most up-to-date opponent, like Reb Moshe's children, he holds like any of these people in these
I don't think...
The reason I'm asking is because the whole idea of what went on, especially in the 9th century, the 10th century, is a different world.
Right. And I don't know. I don't. Right. You'd have to see contemporary post-game.
That would be fascinating.
Yeah. That's a much trickier question. But take a look at this fascinating truth of Mari Bei Rav on page 8. Mari Bei Rav is writing in the 16th century. I think he's writing in either Egypt or Tzfat. There's a whole influx of Muranos.
This pamphlet could have been much bigger.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Frightening.
Yeah. Let me see which... Okay. Let's start from the first paragraph on page 8. The Vikasav Harav Yehuda Blon. Velo od, El Shani Roa She Yisrael Meshumar Garua Migoy Gomor. There are some cases where Yisrael, who's a convert, is worse than a Goy Gomor. Why? Because Shemekavim and a Goyim al Tanai Shle Akiva Bali Mumin. We accept Karbanos from a non Jew. But when it comes to Yisrael and Meshumar, we don't even accept his Karbanos. Okay, that's not really much of a proof, because you could have said that. That depends on something else. So let's read on a little bit more. Skip now to the bold section. Kvar kosav ktsas hamefarshim demeshuman hamechal shabbosos befarhesti velavodizara dino kigoy gomor ve'en kedushav kedushin. He's like a goy gomor, and his kedushin is not even effective. What do you do with the Gemara in Yevamos, which said it is effective? Ve'ha ayri b'meshumad l'dvar macherim. That's talking about a guy who doesn't go to shul in the morning, or he doesn't do regular mitzvos. But if someone's mechal Shabbos or worships Avodah Zarah, that's such a strong level of apostasy that then his kedushin is not even effective. V'im hayos sheyesh cholkem bazeh, even though a lot of people disagree with this reading of the Gemara, most people would. V'omrim shahaya kolel va'afilu meshumar l'avodah zarah kedush of kedushin, even though a lot of people think that that's not the relevant distinction. Okay. Then he goes on. The Ode, next paragraph. Oh, sorry. I'll read on a little bit. Yesh lahavi raya, after the bold section. Yesh lahavi raya she'ein kedushav kedushin, mimasha kasav she'a meshumad harehu kegoy gomor l'chol dvarav. He's quoting a Gemara in Chulin, where it says a meshumad like a goy gomor. Okay? The harambam zal, and even the Rambam, im heyoshe kasav harehu kegoy gomor l'chol dvarav, the Rambam writes that this apostate is like a guy. That's with respect to you shouldn't touch his wine and his shechita is not valid. That we always assume. Okay? But the Rambam Kedushin writes, Kasa b'sefer nashim, that meshumot shekidesh afilush avar avodah zarah b'rtzona harei l'kedushin gimurim. The Rambam disagrees with me, and the Rambam writes that if even somebody who violates avodah zarah, still his kedushin is effective. But he says no. He's like, I think the Rambam would agree with me in this case of the Moranos. Why? Next line. Ad kam l'shono, lo amar ze harambam, haramzal, be'elu mishumbadim shenitmu mesu biguyuseyem, heima va'aviyem, kines arvu k'tzasam biguyusam uvigayim. When you're dealing with the Moranos who are so thoroughly assimilated that they even die as Christians, so I think the Rambam would agree with me in this case that they lose their status as a Jew. And then he goes on to say, and I can't find the relevant line right now. What? Very complicated. This is a big chiddush, that there's a level of thorough assimilation where you lose your Jewish. Then he goes on to say this distinction between the first generation and the second generation. That the whole question about Yisrael Api Shechati Yisrael is the first generation, maybe the second generation. But he says after four or five generations of living as Christians, then you have to assume that Yisrael Api Shechati Yisrael who doesn't apply anymore. And he thinks, therefore, that all these Moranos don't have any, there's no question with respect to Yibam, no question with respect to Yerusha. That's the question.
They still did certain things that they, in their own mind, retained their Judaism, whether it was lighting candles in the closet or whatever the different things were in different areas. So they always knew they were Jews, but they were just outwardly Christians. A big,